So I'm going to talk about Wittgenstein's conception of essences. And basically what I will try to articulate an interpretation of Wittgenstein's conception of essences. And I will contrast this interpretation with what I call the constructivist reading, which I attribute to Baker and Hacker, justly or unjustly, we can discuss that. And whereas the constructivist reading seems to attribute to Wittgenstein a thesis about the essence, essences as a grammatical construction and a product of linguistic practices, I will argue that Wittgenstein is merely concerned to outline a way of approaching questions concerning essences and, so to say, specify a level at which such questions are to be addressed. And let's begin by looking at some remarks, and that's one, two, and three in the handout. So, Wittgenstein writes in the Philosophical Investigations, essence is expressed by grammar. Then the next one, consider, the only correlate in language to an intrinsic necessity is an arbitrary rule. It is the only thing which can milk one can milk out of this intrinsic necessity into a proposition. And then, grammar tells us what kind of an object anything is, and theology as grammar in the brackets. So the question is, how is the conception of essences articulated in these remarks to be understood? Now, there's a temptation to construe Wittgenstein's remarks as articulating a thesis about the essence of essences, according to which essences are grammatical construction, something created by our linguistic conventions. Let's begin by looking at this interpretation, how it may come to suggest itself to us, and some problems with it. A way of arguing for this kind of constructivist reading is to support it by a particular reading of 372, which is number 2 in the handout. So what 372 says is that grammar is not derivable from the facts of nature. That is, facts don't necessitate any conceptual choices, but grammar is arbitrary or autonomous. And I'm going to return to this issue of arbitrariness of grammar later. Anyway, combining the conception that essences find their expression in grammar with the conception of the arbitrariness of grammar, the constructivist reading concludes that essences, or the kind of necessity that we associate with the concept of essence, is the product of grammatical or conceptual determinations. So it is our linguistic conventions that decide the criteria of identity of things, and consequently what is to be regarded as their necessary characteristics. And so Baker and Hacker seem to express this kind of an idea when they write, this is a quotation, it is our rules for the use of color words which create what we call the nature, the essence of color, end of quote. And accordingly, Hacker talks about essences as something, quote, made rather than found, and another quote, a product of convention. According to the constructivist reading, essences are therefore not something out in the world, but the reflections of grammatical conventions on the world. Or as Hacker puts it famously, quote, necessities in the world are the shadows cast by grammar. Okay. When 372 is read in the above way, Wittgenstein is taken to establish, so to say, an order of determination. So essences, or what is necessary, and the rules of grammar are not determined by the world, rather essences of things are determined by grammar. The constructivist reading, that is to say, presents us with two options from which it says Wittgenstein rejects one and chooses one. And I wish to argue that there is no need to choose, and that Wittgenstein is not saying that we should choose. Let me motivate the need for an alternative interpretation by noting some problems with the constructivist reading. Given that Wittgenstein denies that his intention is to present any thesis, it is problematic to attribute to him a thesis about the nature of essences, according to which essences are a grammatical construction. But the above interpretation or the constructivist interpretation, insofar as it seeks to establish an order of determination, seems to amount exactly to such a thesis. Explaining our perception of necessity as based on our adoption of certain linguistic practices, the constructivist interpretation is explaining one thing in terms of another, as being really that. So what we may mistakenly take to be an intrinsic necessity in nature is really explained to be just a shadow of grammar. So that's what it really is. But this is precisely the kind of account which Wittgenstein seems to oppose when he writes, for example, and there are two little quotations in the handout, 4 and 5. So Wittgenstein says, "We do not want to say that this is really that, but only as far as we are capable, point out similarities and differences." And then in the blue book he says, "It can never be our job to reduce anything to anything or to explain anything. Philosophy really is purely descriptive." More specifically, the problem with the constructivist reading is that Wittgenstein's not accepting the thesis about the determination of grammar through reality does not automatically mean that he accepts the opposite thesis of the determination of reality or its essential features through grammar. As I will argue, Wittgenstein does not intend to establish any kind of order of determination. And ultimately, the problem with this idea that we should establish an order of determination is that it ties us to certain fairly rigid philosophical positions. So arguing that reality determines grammar, we get some sort of empirism. And arguing the other way, that grammar determines reality, we get what I'm calling constructivism, or we get some sort of linguistic idealism. But in this paper I cannot discuss any non-exegetical problems relating to these issues, which is of course would be the interesting bit. But let's talk about Wittgenstein. So anyway, I will next try to bring to view a methodological aspect of Wittgenstein's conception of essences, and I'll try to do this in the following way. Rather than using the remark 372 as the key to the interpretation of 371, which is at the first three remarks, so rather than using 372 as the key to the interpretation of 371, like the constructivist reading seems to do, I suggest taking the immediately preceding remark, 370, as the key to reading 371. And so here is 370, it's number 6 in the handout. So Wittgenstein writes, "One ought to ask not what images or Vorstellungen are, or what happens when one imagines anything, but how the word imagination is used." And in all these cases, he's talking about Vorstellung. But that doesn't mean that I want to talk only about words. For the question as to the essence of imagination is as much about the word imagination as my question is. And I'm only saying that this question is not to be decided, neither for the person who does the imagining, nor for anyone else, by pointing, nor yet by description of any process. The first question also asks for a word to be explained, but it makes us expect a wrong kind of answer. In 370, the problem is how to approach the according to Wittgenstein misleadingly posed question, what is imagination? Wittgenstein suggests that this question would be best approached as concerning the use of the word imagination, not by pointing at anything or describing a process. What sort of a pointing or description Wittgenstein has in mind is a little unclear. Apparently, however, he wants to contrast his view with the idea of investigating the essence of imagination as a factual question, for example, by introspection or neurophysically. Read this way, the pointing which Wittgenstein talks about in the remark would be focusing one's attention on one's imaginings and pointing them at them mentally and saying, this is imagining. By description of a process, Wittgenstein would mean something like describing a mental process or a neural process associated with meaning. The problem with approaching a question concerning an essence as a factual question is that an investigation of an individual thing, of individual things falling under a concept, cannot justify a statement concerning the necessary characteristics of things falling under that concept. For example, an investigation of what happens in me when I use my imagination cannot tell us what imagination necessarily is, unless we define imagination as whatever happens in me when I imagine something. What we'll find out will be psychological or neurophysiological facts about me. But for all we know, this might just be distinctively characteristic of me. Or similarly, if we study a larger group of individuals, it is still logically possible that the results are only valid for this group. So the possibility of the results not being valid for cases other than the ones actually studied here is sufficient for concluding that statements concerning necessary features of things cannot be justified through a factual investigation. And moreover, notably the attempt to investigate imagination as a factual question already presupposes an understanding of the concept of imagination. Engaged in such a study, we're not randomly investigating just anything. Rather, we are investigating what we identify as imagination. And importantly, the possibility of raising worries about the validity of the results of the factual investigation beyond the cases actually studied also depends on our comprehension of the concept. In order to be in a position to judge the generality of the results reached in the factual study, we must have a comprehension of what imagination is, which is independent of these results of the study. This last observation then suggests that in order to clarify to ourselves what imagination is, or the essence of imagination, we should indeed turn our attention to the concept we're employing or to the use of the word imagination. Studying the use of the word, we're studying something that is already presupposed in the factual investigation. And these points, the points that I just explained or made, seem to be all contained in the following remark about introspection as a means of getting clear about the essence of understanding. And this is the remark number 7. And although Wittgenstein is here talking about introspection, I think that can be taken to exemplify any factual study. So the point is not just about problems with introspection. So Wittgenstein writes, introspection can never lead to a definition. It can only lead to a psychological statement about the introspector. If, for instance, someone says, I believe that when I hear a word that I understand, I always feel something that I don't feel when I don't understand the word. That is a statement about his peculiar experiences. Someone else perhaps feels something quite different. And if both of them make correct use of the word understand, the essence of understanding lies in its use and not in what they may say about what they experience. And another interesting statement to kind of illustrate what Wittgenstein understands by the investigation of words is number 8. So he writes, "Do you want to understand the essence of grief? Then think about the behavior and the surroundings of grief. Is this really correct? Yes, insofar as it means, then think about the use of the word grief." The relevance of these last two remarks for the interpretation of 370 is that they clarify the sense in which necessities cannot be determined by studying facts. By clarifying this, the remarks clarify the sense in which the misleadingly phrased question, "What is imagination or understanding or grief?" is also concerned with words. Insofar as the person posing the question, "What is?" wants to comprehend what is essential, she needs to pay attention to the use of words. And this, I believe, is also what Wittgenstein is saying in 370 when he writes, "The question as to the essence of imagination is as much about the word imagination as my question is." And my question is, I think, the question about the uses of words. And so consequently, it would be misleading to say that Wittgenstein is somehow trying to substitute a completely different question for the original question concerning essences. So he is suggesting that we substitute a different kind of question for the original question. But it is a question which is meant to... the purpose of redirecting the question is to help the questioner to attain what she's after. So it's not simply a switch to a completely different question. It would also be misleading to object to the approach that Wittgenstein is proposing, that the question about an essence concerns what words talk about, rather, whereas Wittgenstein's question concerns merely words. Again, Wittgenstein seems well aware of this objection, I mean, the objection that, well, essences are concerned, you know, the things, and you're just talking about words. But Wittgenstein seems aware of this objection when he notes in 370 but that does not mean that I want to talk only about words. And Wittgenstein's approach can also be said to be concerned with what words talk about or what corresponds to our words. And so this his investigation is not merely concerned with words. And this he explains in quotation number 9 there. So he says, "Insofar as we're dealing with the use of the word 5, we're dealing in a certain sense with what corresponds to the word. Only this way of speaking is primitive. It presupposes a primitive conception of the use of the word." Now, what is this certain sense then in which dealing with the word we're also dealing with what corresponds to it? Well, it may well be that Wittgenstein says that it is primitive to conceive whatever our words concern as something that corresponds to those words. Nevertheless, as far as corresponding goes, we may say that a concern with the use of a word is also a concern with what corresponds to it in the following sense. Insofar as a word corresponds to or refers to something, we may say that it does this in the capacity of a linguistic expression. It is its use in language that makes us say that a word refers to something. But this means that whatever the word corresponds to or refers to, we know on the basis of our knowledge or understanding of language. And Wittgenstein expresses this point in the context of the previous quotation by saying, this is number 10, "But what does it mean to say we all know what the phenomenon, we all know what the phenomenon of the word thinking refers to? Doesn't it simply mean we all can play the language game with the word think?" So rephrasing this in the affirmative, one could say that to know what the word thinking means, corresponds or refers to, and so on, is to know how the word is used, to know what it is used to talk about. Hence, if we want to see what corresponds to a word, we should look at the use of language. So, an investigation of the use of a word may therefore also be said to be an investigation of whatever corresponds to it. Unlike a factual investigation, however, an investigation of a use of a word, as explained, can bring to view not merely facts pertaining to particular cases, but what is necessary and possible. And so it seems that the above points can be summarized by saying, to talk about an essential characteristic of something is to talk about conceptual determinations. And Wittgenstein gives the following kind of formulation, which is number 11. Who talks about an essence is merely noting a convention. But that to talk about an essence is to note a convention doesn't mean that essences are created by conventions. By saying that to talk about an essence is to talk about a convention, Wittgenstein has not yet committed himself to the claim that grammar or concepts we have adopted are the reason for why we regard something as necessary. Wittgenstein is only saying here that talking about essences, we are concerned with rules or conventions. And I'll come back to this later on. Anyhow, as regards the interpretation of 317, one now in the light of 370, my suggestion is simply that 371 provides us with a nutshell formulation of the methodological points articulated in 370. By stating that essence is expressed in grammar, Wittgenstein is saying, if you want to understand the essence of something, look at grammar, try to describe the use of the relevant expressions. Grammatical observations or descriptions of the uses of words rather than factual investigations of instances falling under concepts bring to view what's essential. So, read this way, 371 makes a methodological point rather than gives expression to a statement about the essence of essence as something created by grammar. Or, as one might say, with reference to 373, which is number 3 in the handout. Grammar tells us what kind of an object anything is, but it does not make them whatever they are. So what I think I've established thus far can be summarized as follows. What Wittgenstein says in 370 about the study of essences provides reasons for adopting his approach. Notably, however, claims about an order of determination do not figure here as reasons for the adoption of this approach. So there seem to be good reasons for its adoption, independently of our having to take any sort of stand on the issue of the order of determination. And that means that the issue of the order of determination does not seem an essential component of Wittgenstein's conception. And next I will argue that the remark 372 doesn't actually lend any support to the view that grammar creates essences. Okay, so, and now I'm going to talk about also the arbitrariness of grammar. So, I said before that 372 is a remark about the arbitrariness of grammar. What Wittgenstein means by the arbitrariness of grammar is that facts of nature don't make any conceptual formations logically necessary. Grammar cannot, in this sense, be derived from facts of reality, and it cannot be justified by reference to reality in the way in which one can justify a true sentence by reference to a fact which makes it true. And put in another way, the point about the arbitrariness of grammar concerns the following distinction: an expression of a timeless and exceptionless necessity, which is the sort of necessity that philosophers have been concerned with. So the expression of such a necessity is not a proposition that is necessary to accept, in contrast to a true statement concerning an empirical necessity, which is necessary to accept or otherwise. We don't know really what you're talking about. If somebody doesn't accept the statement, you know, some basic statements about relating to gravitation, for instance. There's a question whether we can understand that person at all, and it is irrational to refuse to accept that sort of statements where the facts are clear there. Anyway, so but there is, according to Wittgenstein, no similar necessity to accepting grammatical rules. But one might say that Wittgenstein's point about the arbitrariness of grammar is merely negative, and it concerns the impossibility of justifying grammar by reference to reality. But to say that grammar cannot be derived from reality is not yet to say that what we perceive as intrinsically necessary is the creation of our conventions or a reflection of grammar on reality. And this would be a further point which Wittgenstein, to my knowledge, does not actually and explicitly make anywhere. As far as I'm aware, the closest he comes to something saying something like this, the view that grammar creates essence, is the following remark, which is number 12. The rules of chess are not supposed to correspond to the essence of chess king, for they give it this essence. Chess, however, is an example of a game which, in fact and trivially so, is a human creation. The existence of a chess king depends entirely on the rules, just as the existence of promises depends on our linguistic practices. And that this example should be stretched to cover all cases in which we talk about necessity, and that necessity should on these grounds be declared really and always a creation of grammar, that seems problematic. Rather, I think more plausibly, this remark about chess king is not meant to bring to view what all cases really are, but rather it's intended as an object of comparison which can be used to bring to view both differences and similarities between cases in which we talk about necessity. And I'll provide another example of this below. So, but basically, so it doesn't seem that Wittgenstein is committed with the point of about arbitrariness of grammar to the view that grammar creates essences. And if we attribute to him this view, we seem to be attributing to him the view that basically Wittgenstein is seen as explaining something in terms of something else, as I explained in the beginning of the talk. Linguistic practices are the reason for why we regard such and such as necessary. And here it is also worth noting the following kind of ambiguity pertaining to the use of the word determine. Because it might be natural to render 371 as saying essence is determined by grammar. That seems a kind of natural thing to do. But this can mean two quite different things. It can be understood as the explanation according to which linguistic conventions bring it about that such and such is necessary. Or, alternatively, it can be taken as a methodological statement according to which one can come to have a perspicuous view of what is necessary through grammatical observations. What is essential is determined by grammar in the sense of being spelled out or articulated in grammatical observations. And although there are cases in which conventions do create necessities, like chairs and promises and lots of other cases, it's not clear that all cases should be modeled on this kind of cases. But crucially, as I'll try to explain, it's possible to understand the second sense of determine here, so the sense of spelling out or articulating essences. The second sense can form a basis for a philosophical approach to the investigations of essences without any commitment to the idea of grammar as determining essences in the first sense of creation. An example of a necessity quite different from necessities relating to the chess king is provided by the exclusion of reddish green from our color for vocabulary and experiential register. One might say that it is of the essence of red and green that they do not mix, that there is no such thing as reddish green. And Wittgenstein characterizes the role of a sentence stating that there is no reddish green by comparing it with mathematical axioms. So he writes, this is number 13, "There is no such thing as reddish green" is akin to the sentences that we use as axioms in mathematics. But here it is important that Wittgenstein is only comparing the role of the sentence, "there is no reddish green," with mathematical axioms. And noting a similarity in the role of sentences is not the same thing as saying that the perception of necessity in the case of color concepts is simply conventional. Wittgenstein is not aiming to explain our perception of necessity in terms of our adoption of certain linguistic practices seems also evident in the following remark, which is number 15. He writes, "I want to say that there is a geometrical gap, not a physical one, between red and green. But doesn't anything physical correspond to it? I do not deny that. And suppose it were merely our habituation to these concepts, to these language games. But I'm not saying that it is so." End of quote. That Wittgenstein doesn't seek to explain grammar in terms of facts of nature, therefore, doesn't mean that he denies that something physical corresponds to the red-green gap. On the other hand, however, that he declines to explain the red-green gap in terms of facts of nature doesn't mean that he wants to explain the gap as dependent on our concepts or as the result of our habituation to certain linguistic practices. As he notes, he is not saying that what is at stake is merely our habituation to certain language games. I seem to be running out of time. Anyway, so I'm going to take some shortcuts. Basically, the case can be presented, we can contrast two kinds of pictures. There's a picture according to which the necessity of red and green not mixing is well, if you think about this as a necessary truth, we might be thinking about something like that the exclusion of reddish green somehow lies in the constitution of these colors. That these colors are somehow built in such a way that they just don't mix. The problem with this picture is that it is difficult to work out when we tried to work out this picture, well, we get stuck because the regularity that we're talking about when we're talking about red and green not mixing seems to be more than just a regular physical regularity. But the case is rather that, that the sort of color exclusion mechanism seems, it seems impossible that this mechanism should somehow break down. And so we seem to be dealing with a necessity which is somehow more rigid than just physical regularities. And then there is an issue about how to explain this kind of apparently superphysical regularity. What Wittgenstein proposes instead is that we leave this picture aside and we adopt a different kind of picture. And this picture is then the picture this picture consists in the characterization of the essential or necessary connection as a connection in grammar. And there is the quotation number 17, where it says, the difficulty arises through mixing up is and is called. The connection which is not supposed to be causal, a causal experiential one, but much stricter and harder, so rigid even, that the one thing somehow already is the other, is always a connection in grammar. And so in this in this remark, what comes to view is so again the same shift of questions that I argued that comes to view in 370. So there is a switch from one question to another. And it is a sort of change of perspective, and that change of perspective, I'm afraid I don't have the time to read this remark, but number 18, this sort of change of perspective comes to view in the quotation 18 in a kind of illuminating way. And it is this sort of change in approach that I think Wittgenstein is suggesting, but as the quotations about the red-green gap show, or seem to show anyway, this sort of change of perspective doesn't as such commit one to any sort of explanations with respect to what determines what, whether reality determines the concepts, or whether concepts determine reality. Rather, what Wittgenstein is doing, one might say, he is spelling out a level at which questions concerning essences and the kind of necessities which are timeless and unexceptional should be addressed. And well, that this sort of level is that this level can be regarded as an autonomous level presupposes then the point about the arbitrariness of grammar, because that means that the questions we discuss at the level of grammatical determination, they cannot be reduced to factual questions. But that's all. That's the sort of all independence that is needed. But there is no need for any further claims about what determines what. And well, I think I need to stop. And I'm sorry about that.